dark friends. It is with mixed emotions that I welcome you to episode 13 of Wraiths of the Appalachian, our last episode of season 3. I believe that the final leg of this fantastic journey will be as frightening as any other chapter thus far. I urge you to fasten your seatbelts, friends. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Chapter 13. Night Flight. Gray leaned into the open driver's window of the van as Eddie started the engine. Water ran off the bill of his battered cap from a light, drizzling rain. Eddie wore a cap just like Gray's, a parting gift bearing the Sheep Squatch logo that he knew he would treasure in spite of the frightening memories from the woods the previous night. "Sorry again for not mentioning Dawn's secret ingredient in the pizza. We thought T and Flora had told you about the mushrooms when they invited you." "Not a problem," Eddie said. "All's well that ends well." That breakfast more than made up for it. "And thanks for letting me use your shower." "You're welcome back any time," Gray said. "I'd like to jam with you some more. All of us would." "And bring that girlfriend with you," Dawn called. She stood on the covered side porch of the farmhouse, hugging herself against the chill. Eddie waved at Dawn, and Gray stepped away from the van as Eddie backed out from the grassy spot beside Gray's old Ford truck and onto the gravel driveway. "When did I talk to her about Renee?" he wondered. There are a lot of blank spots about this whole visit to the Jordan farm. Once he arrived at the intersection with the two-lane highway, the radio crackled before Eddie could even turn it on. Eddie raised an eyebrow, and Snarly Al sat up with more attention than he usually gave to the tinny voice. Eddie waited before pulling onto the paved road. "That you, Mr. D?"
"Hello, Eddie. I imagine you had an interesting night."
"Yeah, you could say that," Eddie answered. "But then, every night's been pretty interesting since we met. But this one was maybe the most confusing of all, so far." The sky flashed and thunder boomed loud enough to rattle the windows in the van.
"I imagine so, but first I bet you'd like to know which way to turn."
"That would be nice, yes."
"Take a left and head back to I-68. You'll be taking the interstate east into Maryland."
Eddie did as Mr. D had directed and asked, "This'll be a full day trip then?"
"Only about 3 hours or so. You'll be traveling to the South Mountain State Park."
"Kind of a messy night for camping if this rain doesn't let up," Eddie said. The sky was darker than when they had left the farm.
"I don't think you'll be camping, but I hope you have good rain gear since you will be hiking some."
"Sounds delightful." They rode in silence until Eddie spoke again. "So what was up with that scene in the woods last night, with the carousel and all? Did that really happen, or was it just a crazy hallucination from the psilocybin?"
"You make it sound like it has to be one or the other."
"Doesn't it?"
"Everything is real, Eddie. I thought we covered that."
"But some things are realer than others, right?" The radio was quiet. "Well, maybe you can tell me about Nick and that white Sheep Squatch thing, whatever it was. They seemed to be fighting."
"They were indeed."
"What were they fighting about?"
"What did it seem like to you?"
Eddie blew out a breath, but this time he didn't get angry at Mr. D's avoidance of a direct answer. "It seemed like they were fighting about me, and somehow Renee."
"Who appeared to be the greater threat to Renee?"
"Good question," Eddie said. The image of the devilish Nick holding a knife to Renee's throat flashed in his mind, followed by another image of himself threatening her with the same knife. Maybe me.
Food for thought.
As the windshield wipers beat a steady rhythm in the heavier rainfall, Eddie thought about his relationship with Renee, his relationship with his mother, and why things hadn't seemed right with either of them. Eddie drove on for hours, his thoughts uninterrupted until the static popped and Mr. D directed Eddie to take an exit. They'd crossed the Maryland state line earlier, around the same time the highway had merged with I-70. Shortly after they drove around Hagerston, Eddie saw a sign indicating they had entered the South Mountain State Park.
"Take this exit and turn left."
After about 10 miles, Mr. D directed Eddie to turn into a parking lot that appeared to be solely for those leaving their cars to hike. No other cars were present. "Looks like other people have more sense than I do," Eddie said. The rain had stopped, but the wet leaves caused the boughs of the trees that surrounded the lot to hang low.
"You'll find the trailhead marker at the end of the lot."
Eddie drove as far as he could and took the parking space closest to the brown marker indicating the beginning of a hiking trail. "And I won't be looking for a camping site?"
"Not this time."
"So just what am I looking for?"
"Answers. As you have been all along."
"Any suggestions about what I should take with me?"
"Take whatever feels right."
Eddie shook his head and killed the engine. Snarly Owl looked at him expectantly as he opened the driver's door. "Come on, fella, let's see what lies in store next." He looked at the sky and decided to leave the hood of his jacket down and stepped out onto the wet pavement. The wolfhound bounded across the seat as Eddie held the door open and followed Eddie to the back of the van where Eddie surveyed his gear. "Apparently we don't need the stove or the tent, so that's good at least." He pulled his backpack and surveyed its contents. "A couple of waters and some snacks would probably be smart to have, I guess." He grabbed an extra bottle of water and a bag of trail mix from his dwindling supply of groceries and put them into his pack. He looked into the carryall and pondered whether to take the hatchet or not. Shrugging, he grabbed it and the flashlight and put them into the backpack. The guitar sat secured under the back seat, with a blanket blocking it from any curious eyes that might investigate the locked van. Shutting the door, he turned to Snarly Owl. "Guess we're ready for the next adventure, huh, boy?" The wolfhound's tail wagged twice, and they worked their way to the trail. The path led them down into a thickly wooded vale where mist hugged the ground. Many of the oaks and hickory trees in the forest were girdled with strong vines that climbed all the way up to their highest limbs. The further they went, the thicker the fog grew, and before long it enveloped everything in sight. "Seems like we're walking in a cloud," Eddie thought. Snarly Owl led the way on the trail. His ears stood up sharply and he walked with his mouth closed and his head bobbing with each step, taking in scents of which Eddie was not aware. Whenever a breeze blew, the spill-off from the leaves spattered them with large drops, heavy as acorns. The vines hanging down from the trees suggested tentacles from Lovecraftian monsters in the sky whose bodies were obscured by the fog. The sound of running feet, not far off the path but behind them, made Eddie freeze. Snarly, too, stopped and turned back toward the sound. It stopped. But then they heard more running from the other side of the trail. Snarly Owl huffed, and a low growl rumbled deep in his throat. Eddie slid his backpack off, retrieved his hatchet, and put the pack back on. He stood beside the wolfhound, listening and waiting. The rain began again, muffling other sounds which made Eddie even more nervous. He pulled the hood of his jacket up over his cap briefly and then pushed it back down again, frowning when he realized that the hood limited his hearing and peripheral vision. "Should we go back to the van, fella?" Snarly Owl looked at Eddie. He stood perfectly still, not wagging his tail at all. "My call, huh?" Eddie looked back to where they had come from and then up the trail again. "No sense in quitting at this stage of the game, I guess." Snarly Owl turned and they continued their hike. After walking for 15 minutes in the rain, they came to a clearing. It offered a brief respite from the thick fog of the surrounding woods, but it appeared to cover only a distance of about 50 feet. The rain fell even harder there without the protection of the trees. Before they could attempt to cross the cleared space, they heard the running footsteps again. Without any other warning, Eddie felt claws rake across the back of his leg. He turned to see the pale form of one of the goblin things crouching, with blood from Eddie's leg glistening on its claws. Snarly Owl darted past Eddie, nearly knocking him to the ground as he leapt for the thing's throat. He took the creature down as Eddie stood watching, too shocked to do much else. But then another creature pounced on Eddie's back. He staggered and nearly fell to his knees. Snarly Owl turned from the goblin he had attacked, which lay still on the trail, its throat torn open and bleeding. With a fierce growl, Snarly launched himself at the goblin on Eddie's back. Eddie managed to keep his footing as he felt the creature's claws release, and turned to see it and the wolfhound grappling on the muddy trail. Once again, Snarly Owl had the thing by the throat, ripping and tearing as it struggled for release. Lightning flashed, charging the atmosphere around them, followed by a loud boom as more creatures darted from the woods. Eddie swung a defensive blow with the hatchet at the first goblin that attacked, and the weapon stuck in the creature's head. As it sank to the ground, Snarly Yow dashed past Eddie to attack another of the creatures. The violence of the act sickened Eddie, but he had no time to allow himself the luxury of disgust. He set his boot on the goblin's neck and pulled his hatchet free just as another of the monsters dropped on him from above. This time the creature failed to grip Eddie with its claws, so Eddie was able to smash it with a backswing of the hatchet before it could recover its balance. The blunt end of the weapon served well as a hammer, and the goblin dropped to the ground. In the dim, gray daylight of the foggy gloom, huge shadows crossed over Eddie and Snarlyowl. Eddie looked up and saw that several huge shapes hovered in the trees around them as if settling their massive forms amidst the branches. Snarly, too, looked up into the trees, his lupine face as puzzled as Eddie's. The distraction allowed two more goblins to attack. One jumped on Snarly's back, and the other dove low at Eddie's legs in an attempt to knock him to the ground. Eddie struck the creature's back, pleased to see the large cut that displayed pink meat under the light gray flesh, and the goblin rolled into the underbrush, quickly moving out of sight despite its injury. When he turned back to the trail, he saw that two of the pale-skinned things were fighting Snarly Yow. The one on his back raked Snarly's sides with its claws, while Snarly dove at the one before him, driving hard past its bloody claws to reach the goblin's neck. Blood flew from its throat as Snarly tore the flesh and shook his head, coating the surrounding leaves with gore. Eddie pounded the creature on the wolfhound's back with the blunt side of his weapon in an attempt to knock the goblin off, fearful that he might strike Snarly with the sharp blade in the process, but when that attack seemed futile, he rotated the hatchet and struck the creature in its neck. The goblin released its hold and slid from Snarly Owl's back to lie gasping on the ground. Eddie stepped forward, the hatchet raised above his head with both hands, and swung it down with all his might. The hatchet split the goblin's skull where thick blood mixed with pieces of brain oozed onto the rain-saturated soil. Eddie stood panting as he surveyed the area around them. The rain continued to fall, but even over the rain they could hear the sound of more creatures approaching from across the clearing. Three or four goblins, with movement behind them that indicated many more, ran into the clearing towards them. A brilliant light flashed with a deafening blast of thunder that blinded and stunned Eddie. When he opened his eyes, twisted, blackened bodies lay smoking in the mud. The surviving goblins cowered in the forest on the other side of the clearing. Eddie could see them peering around the trees, beginning to rise from where they crouched as they grew brave enough to cautiously approach. "We've got to run, Snarly," Eddie said, but when he looked back at his companion, he saw that the wolfhound was lying on his side, panting. Even in the dim gloom, Eddie could tell that too much blood was mixed with the rain. Eddie knelt and ran his hand over his friend's side and gasped when he felt the large, open wound. One of the creature's claws had sliced Snarly so badly that Eddie could see a rib. Eddie looked back at the clearing where two more goblins had advanced out into the open. By the time they made it halfway across, three more of their companions had entered the clearing behind them. Snarly Owl was much too heavy for Eddie to carry, but even had the wolfhound been healthy, Eddie knew they would have been unable to make it back to the van safely. Tears mixed with the rain that ran down Eddie's face.
"Oh, Snarly, I'm so sorry. We almost had him though, didn't we, boy? We gave him a hell of a fight."
Another brilliant burst of light with the simultaneous blast of thunder made Eddie jump. When Eddie's vision returned, once again he saw the charred bodies of the goblins that had ventured into the clearing. The others had disappeared back into the gloom from which they had come.
"That's no coincidence," Eddie thought.
He threw his head back and yelled into the sky, "Thank you, but I still need your help. My friend is hurt, and I can't move him." A sound like a canvas tent flapping in the wind rose above the sound of the rain, and a shadow crossed over the clearing. Then the shadow landed. A huge winged creature that Eddie first thought looked like a pterodactyl, except it seemed more majestic, more like an eagle, but with all black feathers. Its wingspan reached nearly 3/4 of the way across the clearing.
"Come. I can help you."
Eddie heard the creature's voice, much like he had heard the voice of the moon-eyed woman Eddie had talked with in Georgia, in his mind, not his ears. Eddie rose from where he knelt beside Snarleyow and approached the giant bird. Unsure of how to communicate with the creature, Eddie spoke aloud. Did you kill these goblins?
Yes, but there are more. We should leave before they gather and attack again.
But how can we leave?
You can climb on my back. I'll take you to safety.
What about my friend? He's hurt. Eddie heard the sound of massive wings again, and another shadow as large as the first rose out of the gloom of the trees and landed in the clearing. Thank you, Eddie said, but I don't think he can travel this way.
One waits with him to help you.
Eddie looked back toward Snarleyow and saw a human figure kneeling by him. He dashed across the clearing to find his father packing moss in Snarleyow's wound. Eddie's father looked much as he had when Eddie saw him near Brown Mountain. Although he was not enveloped in the blue bubble of light Eddie remembered from that night, the fog around him glowed faintly with a bluish tinge. Dad? Are you really here? But how? We don't have much time. I've stopped the bleeding, but we have to get him onto the back of the Thunderbird if he's going to live. Snarleyow's eyes were closed, but his chest still rose and fell. Eddie's mind reeled with the overwhelming information flooding him. Quickly, son. There will be time for explanation later. It may be too late to save the beast as it is. Okay, so maybe together we can lift him onto the Thunderbird? But how will he stay on? Cut some of the creeper vines from these trees. They're as sturdy as rope. Eddie found it relatively easy to separate long lengths of vine from the trees, plenty enough for their purpose. He and his father lifted Snarleyow and carried him over to rest him on the broad back of the gigantic bird. Then together they bound the vines around the wings of the bird, near its body, and around Snarleyow's body so that he wouldn't roll with the movements of the bird. Eddie rose after kneeling to secure the vines snugly on his side and frowned. Dad? Eddie looked for his father, but he was no longer in sight.
Quickly now. You must climb on my back.
Eddie glanced at the trail that led back to the van, and then looked at Snarleyow. He took a big breath, grabbed a handful of feathers on the back of the other Thunderbird, and pulled himself onto its back.
You must hold on tightly. You won't hurt me, but this will not be a pleasant ride for you.
The bird carrying Snarleyow rose from where it had crouched, took a few steps, spread its massive wings, and flapped. Eddie secured his cap on his head more tightly with one hand to keep it from flying off, and then his Thunderbird began its launch. Eddie lay on his stomach with his eyes shut, focusing his entire being on not falling off. He didn't want to see the earth disappearing below him for the second night in a row, and this time he had to use his whole body to grip the back of the Thunderbird as it banked its flight and turned into the rain and wind. When Eddie thought they were bound to be high enough that he wouldn't see the ground, he opened his eyes. There was little for him to see. They were totally engulfed in the dark gray clouds. Rain lashed at him so hard that he wanted only to close his eyes again until this ride was over, but he needed to see if Snarleyow's Thunderbird was flying beside him. First, he turned his head to look to either side while keeping one cheek against the wet feathers as much as possible. Eventually, he worked up the courage to raise his head and look ahead and behind, but he saw no sign of the other bird. A brilliant flash made his body tingle, and Eddie felt the thunder throughout his entire body. He was so frightened he couldn't even scream. He squeezed his eyes shut, gripped the feathers tightly, and swore he would remain that way until they landed. Periodically, Eddie saw the insides of his eyelids light up like a movie screen, awash in red light, as thunder threatened to shake him off the back of the gigantic bird. Finally, the storm abated, and Eddie felt the bird begin its banking descent. He opened his eyes and watched as his view of the thin branches of the tops of trees turned into thicker lower limbs and massive trunks. The landing was surprisingly gentle, and Eddie saw that they had arrived at a setting not unlike the one they had just left. He slid off the back of the Thunderbird onto wet grass, his rubbery legs threatening to buckle at any moment. He turned in a circle, searching for the other Thunderbird, but the one he had ridden was the only one of that species in sight. Hello, son. Stopping at the edge of the fog-enveloped forest, Eddie's father stepped into view. Dad, how did you... Where are we? And where's Snarleyow?
I don't know, his father answered, but I'm sure he's in the best place he can be, just as you are. I don't understand. Walk with me. I can't answer all of your questions, and I have only a short time, but all can be well if you let it. Eddie stepped up to where his father waited and then fell in step beside him as they followed a path into the woods. Before long, Eddie saw that the terrain was actually a bit different than the forest he had left in the South Mountain State Park. There were still vines growing around the trunks of the trees and hanging in the branches, but they looked different, more menacing. Some that were no longer attached to the ground writhed and twisted eerily in the wind, like snakes searching for food. Hope they can't sense the vine juice on my hatchet, Eddie thought as he stepped off the path to avoid a vine that slithered toward them along the ground. This doesn't feel good. You're safe with me, Eddie. Can you read my mind? Eddie asked his father silently. It's more like sensing your vibe, although sometimes whole thoughts come through. So it's easier if I speak out loud? Definitely. They walked in silence for a while, and Eddie began to notice shapes within some of the bark of the maple and cedar trees they passed. The patterns began to look more and more like carvings of people the further they went. Hold up a second, Eddie called to his dad. He stepped off the trail to examine one tree more closely. The detail was amazing. It looked as if the tree had engulfed a live woman, trapping her against her will. The artist, if this was a carving, had captured the woman in mid-scream. Eddie looked at the surrounding trees and saw that they all had life-sized human forms, frozen in tortured poses, screaming silently within their bark. What is this? Eddie asked. These look like people turned into trees, or maybe trapped within the trees. They trapped themselves, Eddie's father said. They chose to quit living. Some literally, others just by not doing, letting life just happen. Eddie stared in horror as he took in all the lost souls. Come, his father said, there's nothing we can do for them now. As Eddie turned to leave, he saw a face within the bark of a maple tree that seemed to have just begun to form, the face of a young man, the face that Eddie typically saw every morning in the mirror. Eddie turned away from the tree, rushing to return to the trail and walk again beside his father. He threw a glance back occasionally at the forest of lost souls. They walked in silence for several minutes before Eddie spoke. So where are we? The Wampanoag call it the place where spirits dwell. Are they friendly spirits? That may depend on us. Eddie nodded as they passed through a natural arch formed by rows of cedar trees that grew entwined over the path. When they emerged, he saw an image that took his breath. A thin layer of fog still lingered over the whole swampy terrain. But in several places, thin, wispy shapes rose, emerging from the forest floor. On either side of the path, solid human figures lay perfectly still on beds of moss and ferns that formed at the bases of the large maples and cedars. There were countless numbers of people. Their beds extended out on either side into the fog as far as Eddie could see. Why are these people here? Eddie asked. Are they alive? This is a place of healing, Eddie's father said. We see their sleeping selves here, where they rest, protected from the trauma and pain they suffer in their waking hours. Come, there's something I want you to see. Eddie gaped in astonishment as they passed by the quiet, calm bodies of men, women, and children of all races. So many questions raced through his mind, he didn't know where to begin. Eddie's father stopped beside the figure of a woman with brown, graying hair and a white gown. Eddie gasped as he recognized his mother lying before him. In spite of the frown lines and crow's feet that had carved themselves permanently into her once flawless pink skin, she looked beautiful in repose. Why is she here? Eddie asked. She grieves. Still? For you? Eddie's father nodded. We loved each other very much. Maybe too much. When people grow so close to someone that they almost seem to be a part of them, death is that much more devastating for the one that survives. Eddie's father put his hand on Eddie's shoulder. Sometimes they don't get what they need from those that still live. Eddie felt the blood rushing to his face. I don't like being around her when she drinks,
He looked at the ground rather than at either of his parents. She needs something to kill her pain. Eddie avoided his father's gaze and looked instead at his mother. She never enjoyed the same sort of camaraderie with you that I had, Eddie's father said. He paused and ran his fingers down a lock of her hair. Maybe we should have had a second child, a daughter. He sighed. Or maybe I should have worked harder to include her. He turned to Eddie with a tight smile. But come, I'm almost out of time. They left the forest trail with wisps of mist swirling behind them. Eddie followed behind his father until they came to a bed of moss with no one on it. Dad's bed, Eddie thought. But what do I do next without him to guide me? Where do I go? It's time for you to rest, my son. Me? Eddie's father nodded and extended his hand toward the soft, natural bed. As Eddie gave his father a puzzled look, he noticed that the trees, which should have been blocked from view by his father's body, were visible to him. His father was fading away. Eddie sat and then lay down on the bed of moss. That's it. Just close your eyes and relax. His father was almost gone. Eddie was so tired, and the natural bed felt so comforting that he couldn't keep his eyes open. As he drifted off to sleep, he felt a hand on his forehead, a light touch that might have been a breeze, and then a soft touch on his cheek that might have been lips. Eddie freed himself from his sleeping bag, which was damp with dew amid the pine needles and undergrowth of the surrounding woods, and sat up. In the distance, beams of sunlight illuminated a few tendrils of smoke rising lazily from the remnants of a campfire. Eddie rubbed his face as he tried to clear his head. A campfire? And how did my sleeping bag get here? He stood and walked to the smoldering fire and ran his hand through his hair as he gazed in confusion at the pine woods around him. This is the devil's tramping ground. What the hell is going on? The gear he had brought into the site was just as he had left it, along with his guitar. He knelt to examine the wide circle of dirt around the fire circle. Plenty of footprints. Human and animal, it looks like. But they could be from anything. From who knows how long ago. A surge of hope rose in Eddie's chest, and he walked to the edge of the woods and called out, Snarly? Snarly Owl! Where are you, boy? You out there? Eddie heard a rustle in the leaves, but his heart sank when he saw a pair of squirrels leap from one oak tree to another. Eddie went to his backpack and inspected what was inside. In addition to his hatchet, which was clean, he saw a bottle of water, two empty beer cans, a rag, and a plastic bag containing a dirty knife and fork and a wadded piece of aluminum foil. My supper from the first night? Eddie shook his head and began to gather his gear. He rolled up his sleeping bag and tucked it under one arm, shouldered his backpack, and picked up the small cooler and his guitar. Pausing at the entrance to the path that led back to the highway, he turned and called out again. Snarly? Last chance. This train's leaving the station. After hearing no response, Eddie nodded solemnly and started his trek back to the road. When he broke out of the woods, he marveled at the sight of his van sitting exactly where he had left it 10 nights before. He stowed his gear, climbed into the driver's seat, and started the engine. He hesitated as his hand trembled over the radio on-off knob, but then turned it on. Country Roads blared forth from an oldies station as Eddie stared at the radio. Of course, you do realize this is North Carolina, not West Virginia, right, Mr. D? Or is this you being ironic? The music continued without interruption. Eddie put the van in gear and pulled onto the pavement. When he got to the main highway, he knew he faced a major decision, but without hesitating, he pulled onto the eastbound lanes and headed for home. When Eddie pulled into his usual space next to Renee's little red Kia in the apartment parking lot, he left everything, including his guitar, in the van. He found the apartment door locked, as Renee was prone to do when Eddie was not there. When he opened the door, he saw Renee standing in the kitchen with sunlight from the patio glass door behind her, creating a silhouette. They stared at each other for a long, awkward moment before Renee spoke. Well, how was your trip? Her voice sounded frail, as if she might be fighting to control it. Eddie took 2 steps toward her and noticed the tears brimming in her eyes. It was... hard to describe. I missed you. Did you? Renee bit her lip. Eddie nodded. More than anything.
I'd really like to believe that.
Eddie closed the distance between them and took her in his arms. He kissed her and then hugged her, loving the scent of the shampoo in her hair and realizing how much he had missed the most mundane things.
I was just so confused and upset, he said into her ear, still hugging her. But I know you're the one thing I care about the most.
The dam of emotions burst, and Eddie felt Renee's body shaking.
Oh, Eddie, I was so scared that you were going to leave me, that you didn't love me anymore.
Renee, I'm still confused about a lot of stuff, but the one thing I'm not confused about at all is how I feel about you, that no matter what's to come in the future, I want that future to be with you. Eddie pulled back and wiped her tears from her cheeks and kissed her again.
So do you want some coffee or anything while you tell me what happened yesterday? She asked, smiling weakly as she struggled to regain her composure.
Yesterday?
Yeah, and, well, last night, too.
Renee, I've been gone for, like, over a week. Renee frowned and rubbed her eyes, wiping the rest of her tears away.
You just left yesterday. There's the note you left, she gestured toward the kitchen table.
Eddie sat in one of the wicker chairs at the small glass table and buried his face in his hands.
Eddie, are you all right?
I really don't know. I swear, I think I've been gone for days. I've been to Georgia and Tennessee, to West Virginia and Maryland, and somewhere else I don't even know where.
Renee sat beside him and took one of his hands to hold in both of her own.
You've obviously been through something. Something very stressful.
You think I'm going crazy?
Renee looked at him and smiled sadly.
'Cause I think I might be. Eddie's voice trembled as he tried not to break down.
Whatever it is, I think we can figure it out. Together. She kissed his hands and touched the side of his face.
Sometimes when I feel stressed out, it helps to take a nice, hot shower.
Why don't you do that, and I'll fix us some sandwiches. We can relax on the patio, and you can tell me what you think happened.
Eddie nodded, got up, and made his way back to their bedroom and bath.
When Eddie came back into the kitchen, he saw that Renee was already sitting on the patio with two sandwiches and two beers and frosted glasses the way Eddie liked them. He smiled weakly and took a seat across from her.
Feeling any better? She asked.
Yeah, a little, thanks. He took a sip of his beer. Nice touch. Although beer with lunch always makes me sleepy.
You can take a nap later if you want.
Yeah, I got all the time in the world now. He frowned as he thought about their financial situation since he quit his job.
Don't worry about that now. We can...
Renee stopped speaking as the bushes at the edge of the lawn rustled. Her attention was diverted to a large black dog that appeared through a break in the hedge that led to the trash dumpsters. Eddie looked to see what had distracted her and gasped.
I've seen that dog a couple of times lately, Renee said. I saw him yesterday after I got home from the fair at the school, and then earlier this morning.
Snarly? Eddie said. The dog came up to Eddie, wagging its tail. Before it could reach him, Eddie dropped onto his knees, embracing the dog.
You know this dog? Renee asked.
The dog seemed smaller than Snarly Owl, not nearly as heavy, but the coat, the ears, the facial features were an absolute match.
Snarly, is it you?
The dog sat and thumped its tail twice on the ground. Eddie ran his hands down the dog's body and stopped as his fingers ran over its haunches.
Look, Renee, look at these scars.
He lifted the fur from the skin so that Renee could see three long scars in the hound's hide. And I bet there are more scars on this side. He ran his hands through the dog's fur on the opposite flank, and as he predicted, three scars almost identical to the others were visible, scars which appeared to have healed from an injury that had occurred months or years before.
I don't know how. But it all happened, Renee. It all happened. I'm not crazy. I can't explain it, but I know I'm not crazy.
Renee smiled.
I believe you, Eddie.
I don't understand, but I believe you. Eddie hugged the dog and gave him half of his sandwich. Renee laughed and said, Does this mean we have a dog now?
It can be the start of our family.
A family?
Well, every kid needs a dog, don't they?
Renee left her seat at the patio table to join Eddie on the ground to pet Snarly Owl.
He's beautiful, she said, wiping her eyes again.
But you know, it sounds like you've got a lot to tell me about this time-traveling trip of yours. I do indeed, Eddie said. And we've got the whole afternoon to do that. But you know what would also be nice? Renee shook her head and lifted her eyebrows. A nice Jamaican dinner. And I'd like to fix it. Renee smiled. Sounds like a plan. And maybe my mother would like to join us. Would that be okay? I think that would be perfect. She pulled off half of her sandwich and gave it to Snarly Owl, who wagged his tail and settled down to devour it. Eddie put his arm around Renee as he pet Snarly's head, and Renee hugged him back as she lay her head on his shoulder. I think everything's going to be all right, Eddie said. I think so too, Renee agreed. Snarly's tail thumped twice. There we have it, dark friends, the conclusion of our tale. I hope you found it entertaining. If you found yourself attached to Snarly Owl, be comforted that you can learn all about real wolf dogs by visiting fullmoonfarm.org to see how this incredible nonprofit charity is taking care of these beautiful creatures who found themselves, for various reasons, without a home and in danger of being euthanized. Visit the Facebook page for the Full Moon Wolf Dog Sanctuary, where you can see some of the beautiful dogs that they care for and learn how you can help. You can find the link on my website. There are far too many people to thank who have helped me create this journey for you, and I'll just leave that for you to read about on the Dark Corners page or in my newsletter. I know as you listen to these episodes that you just had to have enjoyed the music of Mambi Yulman. Don't forget that the music you heard in Season 3, as well as the other seasons of Dark Corners, can be heard and purchased on Mambi's website at mambiyulman.bandcamp.com. And I must offer a special word of thanks to my collaborator, Mambi Yulman, because aside from creating the wonderful music for Wraiths of the Appalachian, he also provided the voice for the mysterious Mr. D. For those of you who would like to own Wraiths of the Appalachian in book form, visit my website at davidallenboyles.com to see how you can purchase one. Of course, you'll find my other books there too. That's all for now, dark friends. Please take care, and I'll see you again soon in the Dark Corners.